come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
You've stumbled onto a dark corner of the internet, where this is the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast. This podcast happens every Saturday on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podbay, Castroller, or wherever fine podcasts are found. You can also find us on our website, which is SaturdayNightFreakShow.blogspot.com, where you can find all of our past archived episodes, and you can talk to us on Facebook.com/SaturdayNightFreakShow or on Twitter, where we're at Sat Freak Show. You're listening to the internet radio superstars,
Gary,
Sean,
and I'm Colin. And every week we watch a movie and then we sit down immediately thereafter and drink ourselves silly and talk about it for your edification and enjoyment. Tonight, Sean picked the movie. Sean, what do we watch?
Maximum Overdrive.
Maximum Overdrive from the year
1980, what did you say, 6?
86, 30 years old this year.
Yep.
And it was directed by who?
Directed by Stephen King, his first and only film that he directed.
All right.
Has he written other ones?
Oh, God, yes. Mm. Well, he's written adaptations of his own stuff, and he's also written screenplays, like Sleepwalkers, I want to say it was written. There's no prior book. Storm of the Century, I want to say a TV movie miniseries,
yes,
was written specifically for that medium.
Wasn't Rose,
Rose Red.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he has a history of writing stuff specifically for, you know, motion pictures and adapting his own stuff. I think he adapted like Silver Bullet, Pet Sematary, and a number of his other movies. So I suppose we should talk a little bit about Stephen King here into this, because this is the first time that a Stephen King movie has been featured on our show.
Yeah,
surprisingly. And he is a titan of 80s, specifically 80s, I think, or late 70s, early 80s, or, you know, all through the 80s horror. Yeah. I mean, he's still writing today, but and he's still getting adapted today, I want to say. I mean, there's like the Haven TV show is on, Under the Dome.
Under the Dome was on. Canceled, but on. 11-22-63 is coming out, a miniseries on Hulu from one of his latest books. That'll be out soon.
But it doesn't seem like today his name, I mean, now he's just kind of, you know, the elder statesman of literary horror.
Yes.
Whereas in the 70s and 80s, there was a fucking
he was the
phenomenon.
The face of literary horror back then. I mean, that's if you really, who else was matched with him at that point? Barker, possibly.
Well, yeah, but he came about during Stephen King's,
right,
you know, tenure as the King of Horror. I think he was, right? Stephen King.
Yeah, yeah, we King can say horror. That.
Yeah, I think it's been applied to him before. Yeah, yeah, it had to have been. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, he broke on the scene, I think, it was like Carrie was his first novel, if I remember correctly. And then, like, everything, and it was quickly adapted into a movie. I think that was what made it. You know, that whole thing kind of caught fire at that time because he wrote the book in like 76. And I want to say the movie was like 77 or 77, 78, somewhere around there. I want to say it was made into a movie before it was actually published. So they were making the film.
Well, and then Firestarter was after that, right?
Oh, God. Yes. That was
Drew Barrymore Firestarter.
It was made into a movie in 84.
Yeah.
But I mean, the phenomenon. You know, I mean, I know when you have, I guess your first movie is made by Brian De Palma. But again, Brian De Palma wasn't really, I don't think, a big name at that point. That Carrie was the movie that made him a big name. You know, I mean, he had done four movies, Phantom of the Paradise and
Well, and I noticed some connections, too, that he had with horror as well. I don't know if you guys remember the movie Romero did Knight Riders.
Yeah.
Stephen King's the yokel in the crowd, making fun of the guys on the motorcycles. Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost like his Jordy, or what was it, the Jordy from Creepshow?
Was Knight Riders made after Creepshow?
No, I don't think so.
Because I remember, you know, a period of time when George Romero and Stephen King, I mean, they were like the two, you know, they were, because, I mean, you have to remember, listener, it's like, you know, now we think of like Wes Craven and John Carpenter and, you know, all these guys as like, you know, the heroes of the genre. But I guess they were still finding their footing at this period of time, you know. And so it was like George Romero and Stephen King, when they teamed up for Creepshow, which was another thing that he wrote, you know,
for
the screen, I think based on some previously written short stories. But that was like a big deal. These two, like, you know, big horror guys were coming together to make this thing. But, you know, you think of like his early career trajectory going from like book to movie. Carrie's made by Brian De Palma. Salem's Lot is adapted by Toby Hooper, who is coming off the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And The Shining is made by Stanley fucking Kubrick, which, you know, I mean, that's like a huge leap. You know?
Right. It keeps going up.
Yeah. So, I mean, at that point, you know the name Stephen King, I think, you know, just in pop culture. John Carpenter made the movie in 1983.
Okay.
But that was another, like, team. You know, you're going to take the guy who made Halloween and couple him with
Stephen King.
King.
Yeah.
And you're going to have this thing. At some point in this period, I remember there was a Italian producer, Dino De Laurentiis, who was known throughout the 60s and the 70s. He did like Barbarella. I want to say he was maybe involved in some of the disaster movies. Those are all Irwin Allen, right?
Most of them.
De Laurentiis did King Kong.
Did he?
You remember that? The Jessica Lange, Jeff Bridges, King Kong?
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
That was like a huge deal for 1976. I remember because he was one of those guys who had like the larger than life personality. Yeah. He had a yacht, you know, and he'd spend like a fortune making these movies. And he, I think, not single-handedly, but contributed to the fact that like Stephen King had a movie coming out every fucking year, because De Laurentiis like bought every single thing that this guy wrote and turned them into movies,
right,
whether they were good or not. But like everything that Stephen King wrote, you know, Hollywood would come looking.
Yeah,
I mean, Children of the Corn was like a tiny little, you know, short story.
Yeah, and look where that's at.
Yeah.
I mean, now it's like, it seems like everybody, at least if you live in the Midwest, everybody's seen fucking Children of the Corn.
Sure. It's like, I live near corn, right? This might be scary.
It's not a very good movie, but I mean, you know, it's hell.
Cat's Eye was his as well, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. That was, I'm going to say, around this time, 86, and that was Dino De Laurentiis. Firestarter was Dino De Laurentiis.
What year was it?
The novel, I think, was maybe 86. The movie was like, or the TV miniseries was 90, I think, somewhere in there. I mean, I just remember it was like, you know, there was Arnold Schwarzenegger was out every goddamn year. He was the biggest
in a Stephen King movie.
And there was a Stephen King movie or two or three, you know, Graveyard Shift.
Almost forgot Dead Zone.
Pet Cemetery, the Dead Zone, David Cronenberg.
Yeah.
I mean, they just seem to be like being churned out almost. And you wonder, like, you know, when you look back, like, how many of those were actually like good? Cujo.
I mean, there was a lot of them. So, I mean, you got to sift through them. I remember as a teenager, that scene in Salem's Lot with the kid floating outside the window. That was one of the creepiest scenes when I was younger. I remember that. That's always stuck with me. That was a really cool scene.
Have you ever gone back and watched that to see if it's still?
Yeah, it doesn't. But then it did.
But when you're a kid, absolutely. A fucking nightmarish moment. Well, in 1986, I guess Stephen King was given, you know, De Laurentiis said, you know, as your evolution here as a writer. Silver Bullet was 85, right? That was 85. Another Dino De Laurentiis production. King wrote it. So I was like, all right, Steve, let's put you behind the camera. What would be better than a Stephen King movie? Right.
He can write them.
Directed by Stephen King.
This would be the ultimate.
This is a guy who has no experience now.
No.
At directing a film.
But you figure at some point they're going to give it to him. Just be like, here, you do one. We'll see what happens.
Well, it's interesting to me that, like, as a guy who's known as, you know, a writer, right? I mean, some of the things we look back at Stephen King and say that he does well is characterizations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got these reoccurring themes, I guess, where it's like he draws up these characters and they have to make a stand against evil. You know, you're either trapped in a small location, be the smallest is, I suppose, the car in Cujo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, you see like the mist, the grocery store, and the mist, the truck stop in Maximum Overdrive.
Textile Mill and Graveyard Shift.
Yep. And there's also the...
Misery. Did we mention Misery?
Yeah, right.
Misery, yeah. A bed.
Yeah. Ugh, that still makes my head every time I think of that movie.
They're doing that as a play right now on Broadway. Mm-hmm. It's got Bruce Willis.
Yeah, Bruce Willis is, yeah.
Laurie Metcalf in it.
Oh, that'd be good, Laurie Metcalf.
Yeah.
I'd see that.
As Annie Wilkes, we got to go out to New York. Fuck. Boom. Happening right there. Now. It's not going to go on for very much longer. No. Sure. But it always did kind of strike me as funny. It's like, you know, here's a guy who's known for, you know, making these scary books, you know, and his opportunity to direct, he chooses to do
a comedic route.
Right, right. Because I remember the trailer for this movie says, like, I'm Stephen King and I'm going to scare the hell out of you. He's standing in front of the Green Goblin in the trailer, the Green Goblin truck.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to scare the hell out of you. So it's sold to you as a horror movie.
Definitely. Between that, the poster, which the one I saw, I don't know if this is the one, it's a semi truck with somebody like wrapped in the grill. That was one of the ones I saw. I don't know if that's the cover of the fucking thing, but
the new one, I think, like we were talking about earlier, it's got the crack in the grill. It's a regular semi truck.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, that's kind of.
I'm betting they lost the licensing to that
the Green Goblin.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, especially at this
now.
Point,
Marvel Marvel is very protective about their stuff. Well, Sony would have it because that's a Spider-Man thing. Right, so that would be with Sony now, not Marvel.
Yeah. But it seemed that Sony was pretty okay with things with the Green Goblin and the Walkman killing people in this movie.
Well, they wouldn't have owned the Green Goblin at this point because I think that at this point, Marvel, their movie output consisted of like The Punisher, the one with Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah.
There was a company called it was non-existent.
The Fantastic Four.
Yeah, the Fantastic Four. That was, I want to say, early 90s.
Was it? That one was early
90s? Yeah, and there was a Captain America, which was like...
There was.
Rep Brown.
Like that. Wait for that one, listener, to come. That one's that one might be next, actually.
I've got it if you need to borrow it.
I think, we might, yeah. You're coming back for that one, Gary.
Yeah, there was, so I'm guessing that they didn't have, like, you know, whatever. Their licensing thing was in such disarray. They were just selling it off.
Well,
like,
you got to figure that's the era where they were having a lot of financial problems. So they were probably, hey, oh, yeah, you want to borrow it? Here, give us you know, whatever.
Give us a grand and
you can take
the head.
We'll make Stan drive the truck.
Right. Yeah.
In your Stephen King movie. Did any of you guys ever read the story this is based on?
Trucks.
No.
Now, I was trying to remember. I'm like, the only image that I have in my mind really of that story is the narrator. It happens at a truck stop. Trucks, you know, come to life. And he's like worried about the blisters on his hands because he's having to fuel these.
Yeah.
That is a
line of trucks
thing.
That goes back into, the highway or whatever.
I now know what Stephen King is afraid of. It's blisters. Cause that's a reoccurring thing. It's in some of the Bachman books too. The, Dolan's Cadillac about working on the highway, getting blisters on your hands and the long walk, getting the blisters. Now we know what Stephen King is afraid of, blisters.
He fucking hates blisters.
And apparently autonomous machines.
Yeah.
How many times is the lawnmower man?
Yeah.
The mangler.
The mangler.
Christine.
Yeah. Well, that laundromat where that happened was actually in another book. That's why I like his writing, because you can see locations. The Blue Ribbon Laundry is in another story.
Yeah.
And different characters will make their way through the story. So I do like the way he weaves his universe together. Yes.
Yeah.
But
Castle Rock and Derry and all the locations.
There. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Doesn't he have a new one, Mr. Mercedes? Isn't that about a guy who kills people with a car?
Oh, I don't know.
He runs him down with a Mercedes.
We forgot it.
No, I mentioned it.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you just said it.
Well, that was his epic. There was The Stand and It, the two big,
series, yeah.
Which even the books. You know, I mean, when The Stand came out, because The Stand was written somewhere around the time of like those first four or so novels. I think it was like Carrie, The Shining, The Stand, and I don't know if it was like Firestarter, Cujo, or Christine. You know, I mean, like somewhere in that initial period in the early 70s or late 70s before, like, you know, Pet Sematary, I think it was early 80s that he wrote it. And, you know, trying to think of like immediately what came out, Tommy Knockers and all that stuff starts after that.
Yeah.
And then It, I think, was another, but those were massive books. I just remember being like, holy fuck.
Well, then you start looking at the short stories that were adapted, like you were saying, Trucks, The Night Flyer from Nightmares and Dreamscape.
Oh, yeah. They went after everything. Yeah. I think everything in like Night Shift or different seasons. Well, no, all three out of four of the different seasons have been made.
Right.
He's got to be the most adapted author.
I would think.
Ever, right?
Yeah.
He'd have to be.
The sheer number of things.
Yeah.
And even in like, you know, television, they did like the Nightmare and Dreamscapes TV series, which adapted most of the stories out of that book.
Yeah, Golden Years.
Yeah.
It just keeps going.
Yeah. Still doing it.
The mark that this guy has left on popular culture just cannot be overstated, I guess. But but still, you know, it like, you know, it brings us to Maximum Overdrive. I mean, just from like, you know, the idea, the concept of this movie.
Mm.
Is that Earth flies, or a comet
flies close to Earth,
and we're caught in the tail of the comet.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, somehow machines gain intelligence.
Yeah.
It's not really explained other than that.
No, not at all. And the and the boundaries of what can be controlled are a little vague. Yeah,
twitchy.
Well, is it just machines with electrical, or can anything? Because at one point, like the fucking sprinkler is going on the street.
Yeah, that pop on off. It's like,
It seems a little farther.
I'm thinking if the sprinklers can get you, going to the bathroom is out of the question.
Yeah.
Because you're getting taken out. Well, the car that the young married couple were driving, it wasn't taken over. Mm-hmm. But then
cars? Like actually, the smaller just car. It was only trucks.
Yeah, the trucks and even the ice cream. That was an ice cream truck.
Ice cream truck. Mm. The smallest thing was the fucking the sergeant, the guy with the little vehicle with the gun on it that kind of drove up in the latter. Yeah,
the
half
only
of the
car
movie.
I actually saw anything was the police car in the dog's mouth, and that was a remote control car.
Walkman. These machines gain intelligence, and the first thing that they want to do is kill humans.
Yes.
It's kind of like The Happening, right? The M. Night Shyamalan movie?
Yeah.
Except instead of
the trees coming alive, it's fucking...
Or they just decide we're going to kill humans?
Yeah.
So they kill them with pop cans.
Pre-Skynet.
Pop cans, lawnmowers, remote control cars, Walkman. Yep.
Hair dryers.
Yes.
Video games.
Dildos.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever.
I'm sure it happened. Somewhere out there.
In our version, it did anyway.
Yes.
There you go. And so all of these people who survived this onslaught of mayhem, vehicular mayhem? Mechanical mayhem.
That's
there you
better.
Go for the
mechanical
alliteration.
Mechanical mayhem, because that includes everything.
There we go.
Except the sprinklers, which is plumbing. So whatever.
That was the weirdest one. How is the sprinkler going to get you? I don't know.
I don't know. It's just that one's like taunting.
Maybe it's
like
just snitching, saying, here's a human. Like the burger thing. Humans are here.
Humans are here. Yeah, they don't all want to kill. They all just want to, you know, do something. Although I suppose the sprinkler could like, the pressure from the water could be so much that it starts whipping around, wraps you around the neck, strangles you.
It could happen.
Where was that? Like, at some point, he's just, like, the kid's driving down the street, and the sprinklers, like, all start wrapping around him, and he's struggling to get through and everything. That'd have been cool.
Yeah.
I'd have been up for that.
Yeah.
Maximum Overdrive remake. Directed
by
Sean.
Why has nobody remade that movie?
It has been remade. Gentlemen, it was called Trucks, and it was made for, like, the Sci-Fi Channel or something.
Really?
Yeah. What?
Oh, fuck.
Where have you been? No.
Why are you watching things on the Sci-Fi Channel?
I didn't
see
it. I remember.
I want to see it now.
Cover for it.
To be just comparatively.
Yeah. Well, fuck. It's another adaptation of the story, I guess. No Green Goblin truck.
I can't get past any production company that puts out Sharktopus versus Warwolf or Werewolf. Or what was it? No, it's
Piranaconda.
Piranaconda is
There's something about a killer werewolf or something, but it's a killer whale and killer whale. Whale-wolf.
It's like Werewolf.
Werewolf.
Yeah.
Yeah. Versus Octopus Shark or whatever.
Sounds brilliant. Yeah. Werewolf.
Werewolf.
It's a whale by day and a wolf by night.
I swear I have to find out what happened with Trejo, because I knew Ving Rhames started taking all them crappy movies because his dogs supposedly killed the house sitter or whatever. I got to find out what happened with Danny Trejo, because he's in all them crappy zombie movies too.
Yeah. Danny Trejo just wants to work.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, I'll show up for anything.
He wants to be, what's the thing? Oh, he wants to be Lobo for DC. He just put in his bid for that.
Well, he's got to go somewhere. He's got to go up from wherever he, in the direct-to-video direct that he's hanging on in right now. That machete money must have dried up.
Yeah.
Not going to be.
Yeah, they never made machete in space, so.
Yeah.
He says it's coming, but, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, fucking Rodriguez can make it for a buck. Hey, come to my house for a weekend. We'll make machete.
Why can't you make a machete direct-to-video? I don't know. Maybe there's no audio. Nobody showed up for the
segment. Hey, maybe.
So this movie announces its tone in the very first scene. I want to say where a bank teller machine calls Stephen King himself in a cameo an asshole.
Uh-huh. Hi, sugar buns. Yep. This machine just called me an asshole.
We should also establish that this movie takes place in North Carolina.
North Carolina. Yep.
Which explains why everybody has like these really, everybody just sounds
a little twang.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like
everybody just like sounds like an idiot.
The worst of the worst in this, right? Like somehow all the people who are in this movie are like the reddest rednecks.
Well, and they captured all the main redneck names. They had Bubba, Zeke, and what was the other one? Rusty. Yeah, so yeah, they covered the three main redneck names. So
and Beal.
Beal. Yeah.
Bill
and Brett.
Yeah. I'm sorry, good people from the South. We're not disparaging you in any way, but like
I got rednecks in my family, so that's all good.
I mean, come on.
But I think this goes to, again, this is Stephen King's like really broad characterizations of people. Like, there is nobody as bad as Bubba Hendershot, the guy who runs the Dixie Boy truck stop. I mean, he's just, he's played by Pat Hingle, and he's like the world's worst human being.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what's the thing at the beginning of the movie? He's he's working outside of 40 hours or something like that? Or like he calls fucking Emilio Estevez into the office, and he's like talking to him. It's like, either you do what I say or you're fucking going back to prison.
Yeah, I own you. Oh, I was like something about working 9 hours and
only getting paid eight. Only getting paid eight.
Yeah, yeah. It's like he wants him to work outside.
Back on the clock or whatever the hell.
Yeah,
I own you, boy.
Yeah,
either the state owns you or I own you or whatever. Because Emilio Estevez is the stereotypical.
He's the bad boy. He's the outsider. He's the
heart of gold. Though.
The heart of gold. He did something wrong in his past, and he's ashamed of it. But. All he needs is a good woman to get redemption. That's all he needs.
And he makes love like a hero, according to her.
Does. Oh, yeah, and he's a genius.
Yeah, that was a little overstated at that point in the movie.
Laying it on with a trowel.
Complete with scene where he's just like, you don't understand me. And he turns away from him. He's like, I did some wrong things in my past, and I'm ashamed of it. And he's like, no. I love you anyway.
Oh yeah, that was his best weak Brando. There, boy.
It really was.
A little bit of James Dean thrown in.
Yeah. Like, who would have spotted what was Emilio Estevez doing before this movie?
Yeah.
St. Elmo's Repo Fire? Man. Yeah, Repo Man. Because Young Guns lay in his future. Mm. And Men at Work with brother Charlie Sheen.
Young Guns hadn't come out yet.
Right.
So God, yeah, it was just all the teeny bopper movie. Breakfast Club was out by
right.
We were saying outside was the Outsiders out before this?
Yeah, because they were all young in that movie.
That was like 83 so he was part of the up and coming the Brat Pack. But so I mean, I guess like he was the biggest star, you know, attached to this. And we said he had a little bit of the swagger of his dad from Badlands when Martin Sheen was in Badlands.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
A little bit of Martin Sheen in this.
I always thought he would. To me, he's closer. I mean, Charlie sounds like his dad more, but Emilio, to me, acts like his father a lot more.
Yeah.
But, I mean, especially if you watch when Sheen was younger, as he gets older, he just kind of, I don't know.
Yes.
Getting on that Gary Busey line as he gets a little older.
Has Emilio Estevez like done anything recently?
I don't know.
You'd think he'd be on like a CSI or something by now,
right? Not recently. No. The last thing I can remember, you've dropped off.
Well,
is he directing?
He did. What was the hotel with the Kennedy movie?
Oh, Bobby.
Yeah, I think it was just Bobby.
No, wait. Yeah, maybe
Bobby Kennedy got killed. Like in the kitchen going from somewhere. What was that? Fuck, I don't know.
Out in California?
Yeah, something
by Saran Saran?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
that was 68 when that happened, wasn't
it? Yeah, Emilio Estevez.
There was a movie directed recently.
Yeah, well, probably like 5-8 years ago, something like that. But he directed that and was also in it. But that's the last thing I can remember.
Yeah.
With fucking Emilio Estevez in
it. Yeah, because the Mighty Ducks has run its course.
Right.
Yep, until they reboot it.
And he was in the first Mission Impossible. God knows
how long he was.
Yeah, yeah.
Damn. Killed by an elevator.
Yeah.
What a way to go.
Well, has hopefully he's keeping his nose clean. Movie.
He looks like his dad now, too. He's like fat and Martin Sheen.
Martin Sheen's got the new grill, though.
He does. It's kind
of creepy. Whatever you think.
Right. It's all shiny and big, and he's got that kind of lift to him a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The girl, Laura Harrington, don't know what she's done other than this. She's rocking the kind of the 80s. I thought it was the Madonna look. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know. Very chic.
A lot of them carried that look,
the Madonna or the fucking, kind of, or the what's her name?
Kind of tomboy look a little
Girls just want to have fun. What the fuck?
Cyndi Lauper.
The Cyndi Lauper look, kind of.
Yeah, you got to wear a jacket.
Yeah, jacket and that hat.
And that skirt.
Yep.
Yeah, the skirt was pretty hot.
That was nice, yeah.
But I love the way, like, the first scene where she meets him. What's he doing? He's, like, filling up the, was he
pumping gas or something, wasn't he?
No.
No.
What the fuck is he doing?
I thought he was, like, filling the gas back up.
He was checking out the Happy Toys truck that had pulled over by itself. He was checking that out.
Yeah, yeah,
and then she come up behind and she's like, vroom, vroom or something. And
Yeah, and then just like, hey.
Yeah, because I thought they were going to be buddies with the way that kind of looked, you know, like they had met before.
So right,
just coming to see him or something.
And I was like, nope, they don't know each other.
Nope.
This is just they like,
will in about 5 minutes.
And it really was. Like, within 30 seconds, it's like, you're cute. It's like, am I?
Yeah.
You want to go make out?
Yeah.
Sure.
I don't know if to credit that to the 80s and the promiscuous 80s. Were they that promiscuous?
We were whores back then.
I wish they were more promiscuous.
If you're
Emilio Estevez, you just crush and muff.
Crush.
You just got to beat him off with a stick.
Oh, dear Lord.
Oh, let's just leave that alone.
Oh.
Well, this was before he wound up with Paula Abdul for a while. They were
really?
They were an item for a while. Oh, yeah.
Oy.
And Charlie was dating Ginger Lynn. So, that was that era.
His harem of porn stars. So the trucks all converge on this this truck stop, I guess, right?
With no apparent purpose.
What's the hierarchy, I guess? Because there's politics, right, with these machines? Vehicles?
Oh, yeah. Well, the Green Goblin truck's the leader for sure.
Because it's got a face.
Yeah.
Sure.
And there's like two other trucks that were mainstays, and then the rest of them were just.
Well, there's a bulldozer. He's the muscle.
Yeah.
Because he can actually like bulldoze shit.
Yeah, but he doesn't like the, like, they come in, the bulldozer and the army truck. They come in a little later.
I take exception to the term army truck. That was a skateboard with a gun on it, basically. And a steering wheel so they could do the Morse code tap out.
Right.
Because I mean, if you looked at it, there was no pedals, there's no accelerator, there's no brake. So you know,
what do you need that for? You're a machine. You can just like drive yourself all over the place.
Yeah, I guess.
That's why I was wondering about like some of the things. Like you actually get to see like you know these gauges and switches all throwing themselves.
Yeah. Did you guys notice though when Tow Mater was at the first truck stop where the young couple pulled over? You notice he popped the clutch, right? The clutch came all the way up before the gas ever went down, so that would have stalled. I was thinking to myself as I'm watching this, I'm like, you know, I loved this movie when I was younger, and I'm watching it, and you get jaded with the movies after a while. I still like the movie, but it's like you start picking out the little things, like, are there really palm trees in North Carolina? Or just little things like that that start to, you know, wear at you. And that was one of them, just to pop in the clutch. I'm like, that would have stalled that truck. But, you know, just little things like that. I don't know if you just get pompous or what.
You're going to give a pass to Yeardley Smith in this movie or no?
What's that?
Well, you're saying things would drive you nuts after a while.
Oh, God.
Yeah, because she yells anymore? Holy shit.
This poor woman has a face that's made for voice acting. Yeah.
She almost has one eye. That's how close her eyes are together.
Yeah, they are.
That's just it that looks like smush
sucked
face.
Into a vacuum.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Oh God, she's got the most annoying voice too. Mm-hmm. She's a part of the half of this newlywed couple. What is it, Kurt and Connie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she just yells at him like all the fucking time. It seems like, Kurt, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Oh. Curtis. Well, that's why I said in the movie when the beam fell on him, she goes, Curtis, you dead? And I'm like, in about a year, he's going to wish he was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Ugh. She's a shrill, shrill woman.
Indeed.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, and then her over the top kind of Southern accent, too. It's like, ugh.
Yep.
Haven't listened to that. I'd have put a bullet in my brain quick. Well, I'd have walked out in front of the trucks.
Hey, man, in small towns, you don't have much to choose from.
Yeah, I guess.
That's all you got.
I mean, Curtis was at least a stand-up guy. He, sure. You know, he wanted to help and do things. And she's like, no, you let somebody else do it. And what's all these big, big, tough truckers are all just standing around hiding in the corner. They're like, no, let Billy and Curtis do it all.
Yeah. They're smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. Until later on.
They know.
Until later on when they're all just like, what's going on? Somebody's shooting?
Yeah.
They all die.
Or they can steal a ring off of a dead woman's finger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Who knows what's going on?
And then just stand there while a truck runs you over. Well, but
we were taught cosmic justice quickly. In that one, what happens when you steal from the dead? You become one. Right.
There you go. The 80s horror movie, The Lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There is like a lot of vehicular deaths, which were kind of cool. You know, the movie actually did have going for it. I don't know. Were they?
I thought so. Like,
yeah.
Because you don't see that that people getting hit by stuff, that kind of splatter that we got in this movie. Yeah. Like, well, yeah, the obvious, like oh, they packed a dummy full of fake blood and just hit that shit.
Unless it's the Devil's Rejects over there, right? That might be one of the better ones.
Yeah. well, you don't get that splatter like that, or just pieces, what looks like pieces of people just kind of flying everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
You get that a lot in this movie.
People getting steamrolled.
The trucks they killed the kid. Yeah. They steamrolled the kid.
When the ice cream truck was coming, it had brains on the front of its grill.
I know. I was thinking, like, you know, for like if you're in a Stephen King movie, I guess one of the things that you're going to have to do is have like a lot of the red stuff in a hose. Just
sure.
You can spray everything down. There's not like a lot of blood spray necessarily in the movie, but there's the evidence of it like pretty much everywhere.
Yes.
I remember, I want to say like I had a Fangoria magazine that was talking about this movie when it was coming out. And this is the 80s again. So I remember at that point in time, the ratings board, the MPAA, was really hard on horror movies. They were cutting all the good stuff out of it. So God knows.
Well, Siskel and Ebert kind of led that charge after the Friday the 13th. And
yeah, they just hated them. I mean, like you watching movies now, you have no idea. Like the stuff that in the 80s, they cut the living shit out of these movies gore-wise. They just didn't want to see any of it. And I remember them describing an effect that I really wanted to see because, you know, the guy who goes out for Fangoria, the journalist, you know, is there witnessing this stuff happens and then he's writing about it. Article comes out. When the movie comes out, that scene's not there. But he was talking about the scene where the Little League coach or whatever gets beaten in the head by the pop can.
Yeah.
And I guess they had like one of those air bladders full of blood, like on the top of his head, and they inflated the thing and it's spraying, you know, there's a pinhole in it.
Right.
Sure. Cause I think I've seen the picture of this and then it pops and it bursts. And in the movie, all you see is, you know, he gets hit in the head, falls down. And then there's like a ton of fucking blood on the, on the ground. And they're like, where the hell did all that come from? Well, it came from the shot that you don't get to see in the movie anymore.
That's unfortunate. But there's still a lot of blood in this movie. Yeah. Like, I think the first time I saw this, and maybe the only times I've seen this, have been on TV. I'm sure it was on USA at some point. Prior to tonight?
I think I
may have only seen this on TV. So it was probably, I mean, guaranteed it was cut down probably significantly. But yeah, bloodier than I remember it, obviously. But yeah.
We don't remember any scenes, like big scenes being missing for the television.
No, nothing. There's nothing in here. I was just like, I don't remember that being in there before. I think they just cut around everything at that point because you know,
it'd be just the gore.
Yeah, they just cut the gore shots. Like they never, they would have never showed the like the Little League coach with the fucking hole in his head. Because I don't remember that. I remember him like laying there and everybody being dead. Even the kids get killed by the.
Remember catching on like USA Up All Night.
Yeah, I'm sure it was Up All Night.
And then I remember that because the knife turns on. It shows it, turned towards her. She screams. Then the next thing it cuts to is it going across the floor at her.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't show the cut
going
in the arm.
And going into her foot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure they just cut around everything. So this is pretty, I got the full Maximum Overdrive in this.
What was the line? the title line. The
right, right. It was like I was doing fine until every mechanical thing on the planet started going into maximum overdrive.
80 signature thing.
Oh, boy. What are you thinking of? Like, that line somewhere. Makes no sense out of it being the title of the movie. It's like, what? No. But, yeah, it kind of was a staple at that point. It's like, got to have the title in the movie. Because then people go, ah, bravo, bravo. Yeah. We get it now.
You worked it in there. Yeah. You clever, clever person. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For some reason, I keep on thinking of Predator. Because they did try to work the title in, but the original title was Hunter.
Right.
So he's like, yeah, what is it? It's like, it's almost like he's tracking us down. Like a hunter. Like that would have been the title line.
Right.
And they changed
it. Like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
They changed the title and the monster, and we were all better for it.
Mm. We have anybody else of note in the Dixie Boy truck stop?
Oh!
A lot of bit players.
Bit people players.
In lots of movies.
Yeah.
Giancarlo, that was his name,
Giancarlo Esposito. Giancarlo Esposito, mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's been in a ton of stuff.
Oh, Breaking Bad fresh fame.
And you brought up Usual Suspects. He's the Fed at the port.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that. I could go back and watch that.
And Leon Rippey with hair is in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. My favorite thing is he plays Virgil in Beyond the Law.
I don't remember.
With Charlie Sheen, the biker movie.
Yeah.
And he's Virgil in that. And then he was with Emilio Estevez in Young Guns 2. He was the sheriff, Bob.
He's in Cuffs.
Yeah.
He's played Kane in Cuffs.
He plays an asshole cop in a ton of movies.
Yeah. Yeah. He just seems like he's always the.
He was in Life of David Gale. Everybody remembers that movie.
I do.
Congratulations,
thank
Sean.
You.
Very, very good.
I like that movie.
Right there.
I like that movie.
Yeah. So what do the survivors do? How are they going to survive the night against the truck?
The trucks that apparently have no purpose. Like, we just want to run circles around you. When we could just sit here and wait, not waste our gas.
Right.
And we don't – I mean, I can't imagine they wanted to kill them because they – could have just run all the trucks into the building.
Well, and that was very curious of the trucks.
Well, they do mention at some point that Emilio Estevez figures out that they haven't actually rushed the diner because the diner's sitting on it's got a basement. It's a hole in the ground. Yeah. If you drove in there with a truck, you'd go right into the basement. You're not getting out.
Yeah. Right.
But I didn't get that as an audience member until he said it. It's like, oh, that's probably why halfway through this siege, you know, it's like, that's probably why they're not coming in. I'm like, why don't they just fucking kill these people?
Yeah. And that leads me to questions with the title card at the end of the movie.
Yeah, well, we got to get to that. We will get to it. But, well, I mean, part of it is, the movie diffuses its own tension by the title card at the beginning because it says that, you know, that for 8 days, the Earth passed through the Rhea M comet, you know, whatever, because they had
They broke it down to the second.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, I get it. This is going to last for 8 days and then it's over. So.
Even one of the characters in the middle of the movie is like, you know what? I think if we just last 7 days, we'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brett comes up with that bit of wisdom halfway in the movie.
Yeah, her name's a lot of information.
It's a girl.
Well, she was listening to that report when the Bible salesman was fondling her in the car. And that's what she said. She said, did you listen to anything that man said?
She heard like 5 seconds of that guy on the radio. Said, get off the highway. She heard. What? She's not getting.
She only met Emilio Estevez for 5 seconds and she understood he was a genius.
See, this is why we should distrust her character. Emilio Estevez is a genius in this movie, and she knows exactly what's going on halfway through with little to no information.
Mm-hmm.
Trucks are alive, but I think it's the comet. Comet passes near Earth. People watch, fascinated. That's a wonderful.
Well, somebody in there
was a slow news day. Otherwise,
Emilio Estevez was the one talking about. Well, you know, if it was aliens trying to repopulate the planet, they'd come in, do this,
the broom.
Yeah, the broom.
Yeah, that was kind of one of those speeches where you're like, oh, God.
Yeah, it's like, well, okay.
Yeah. So the trucks, as far as we can understand, like their main mission objective is to
circle.
Do an Indian circle around this diner and just drive around until they run out of gas. And learning that this is going to happen to them, they figure out Morse code.
Mm-hmm.
And they can communicate through honks to tell thank God, there's a Cub Cadet or whatever, Cub Scout.
Yes, that just got his merit badge in Morse code.
I like how you went the machine route and called him a Cub Cadet.
Yeah,
like,
bravo. Sorry, the lawnmower rolled in there.
It's like, ah! No, there's a Cub Scout.
Segway.
Yeah.
Yeah, who can understand the Morse code and realize that the machines are saying, come out and fuel us.
We will not kill you. We need gas.
But if you don't, we will kill you.
Yeah. Yeah. And they must have some kind of telepathy. I mean, we're assuming CB radio or something, but they are able to summon every single truck in North Carolina, probably the entire state, maybe out of state.
Right, because it's the only gas station that exists within
that they hadn't killed a
1,000-mile radius.
Which apparently. I'm saying piss-poor planning on the truck's part.
Yeah.
Maybe you shouldn't kill everybody that works at the gas station. You need someone to pump gas.
Because as far as we know, the survivors at this gas station are the last people on Earth.
From the way it looks, yeah.
Because anytime they go outside,
yeah, there's no one.
There's no one. Everybody's dead.
Yeah, but they're in the middle of the highway, in the middle of nowhere. They are not the last people on Earth.
What are you talking about?
They are not the last
people. Why do the trucks how come they don't have this setup going on at a different truck stop?
Are you kidding me? Like, those 100 trucks are the only trucks left on Earth? There's trucks everywhere else.
Well, and then I love how the island was called Haven.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There's no cars allowed on this.
I don't think you put too fine a point on this, Steven. Here, let's just call it Haven. Yeah. There we go.
This is the island they want to get to.
Yeah. Yes. I would have much rather had a Dawn of the Dead remake end where they show up at the island and all the trucks come crashing out of the bushes.
That would have been good. That's the ending of the remake today.
Yeah.
Like, they go to the island and there's fucking just trucks waiting.
Or at least bulldozers that were building more houses on the island.
Yeah. All the construction vehicles are there and they turn and kill them all. Fuck, why are we not writing this movie right now? Copyright 2016. Of course. Maximum Overdrive, you got to get the name recognition to draw people in.
This is the era of stealing someone else's idea and trying to make it look better.
That reminds me, this is not the first killer truck movie. There was a story written in the 50s. Oh, yeah, there's Duel.
Yeah.
That was from Spielberg in the 70s, a film. Well, that was actually driven by a dude, but it was using the truck as the weapon. But there was a story written in the 50s called Killdozer.
Oh, my God. I've seen that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's on Sven Goody all the time. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
That's an autonomous machine. And there's the car. Can't forget the car.
Yeah. The hearse.
Was the hearse not
piloted? I think it was possessed by the devil, too. Well, the car was definitely possessed.
I saw the hearse, and I can't remember what the deal was with it. If it was a haunted
hearse, it's a hearse.
Yeah, but I can't remember if there was somebody actually driving it. Jesus, I've seen this movie. I remember the car because that's the one where it is like the devil or something driving the car. There's nobody behind the wheel, and it's running people off the a Cadillac or something. It was a big fucking.
For the car?
Yeah.
All I remember is, as a kid, I just remember hearing that when it blew up in the smoke, you could see the devil.
Yeah, you see the yeah.
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 Bravo.
Okay. So anyway, these band of humans, their defense against the cars is that they discover that for some fucking reason, Bubba Hendershot, I just love saying that name.
I was going to say, I forgot his name. Hellshot, Hershey's
Hendershot. See, when I was watching it, I'm like, didn't in Unforgiven... Wasn't Clint Eastwood talking about when he was all, feeling the effect of the flu or whatever that he was suffering from? He's talking about, was it Frank Hendershot? I seen him. I seen Frank Hendershot. His face was all maggots. You don't remember this? Unforgiven. One of the greatest westerns of all time. It's got Clint Eastwood in it.
Unforgiven.
Yeah. Okay. Good one. It was Hendershot. It's a good name. It's Bubba good name. Hendershot.
And Bubba called everyone else Bubba. Bubba. I think that's classic self-loathing.
Yeah, that was kind of weird.
Because he did call him Bubba, you're an idiot.
Yeah. Yep. We should just start calling each other Bubba.
That's because his dad. It's because he has daddy issues. Guarantee it. He has daddy issues. I guarantee it. That's why, because his dad did it to him. He insulted him. It's like, think you're smart, don't you, Bubba? Yeah. And now he does it to everybody else. He's got daddy issues.
So his real name wasn't Bubba.
No, his real name's not Bubba.
It's probably Frank Hendershot.
Probably.
And that's why
nobody's real name. No, nobody's real name is ever Bubba.
No.
Because my dad is Bubba, but that's not his real name. People just give you.
Seriously, your dad's Bubba?
Yeah, my dad's Bubba.
Get the fuck out.
Yeah.
Really?
My dad's Bubba. My dad's been Bubba forever.
That's what he brings to the show.
All right then, Bubba.
Yeah, my dad's Bubba. To Bubba.
So Bubba, that was the same one. If you can get me another brewski there.
No.
No.
to your dad, to Bubba. Dad.
With an empty bottle.
The Bubba has somehow amassed, because he's got to be like one of these, like, you know, the commies are coming at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Right. He's, oh, yeah. He's a doomsday prepper.
He's definitely militia.
He's a doomsday prepper. It's like, fuck it. I'm out in the middle of nowhere. Shit goes down.
And he has himself in his basement an armor.
Everything.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's an arsenal. Would, right? Because, I mean, if, you know, the trucks were coming.
He has everything you need to get a visit from the Alphabet Soup Squad.
Hell? I just
ATF, DEA.
Maybe I just, yeah. That's why I don't get his character. It's like the fucking trucks are coming, right? They're attacking. They've killed people in your parking lot.
Yeah.
Plowing people over and into ditches and doing all this heinous stuff to them. So he does go down and, you know, with his trusted companion Pigface. What's that guy's name? He looked like Joey. I had like a Joey. Pig face.
He did.
Yeah, he did.
Is that his son? It feels like it's his son.
Could be. Bubba's son,
or like
Joe?
His nephew, his dumb nephew.
Why not?
Always feels
he's
like
the mechanic,
dumb nephew,
right? Got the yeah.
He's one of the
Joe, right? I remember the name tag.
Yep. Yeah, Joe. Yeah. And the other guy got killed.
So, right. He got his eyes burned out by gasoline.
Deke,
the
or,
fucking,
what was his name? Deke
machine
or something?
In his face.
Yeah, well, yeah. And that looked like mud water or oil. That wasn't diesel.
Yeah, what are they putting in these?
The
trucks?
Gas back in the '80s wasn't as clean,
not as refined as it is.
It wasn't that dirty either.
Yeah. So he's got a bazooka because I mean, like, really, what else can you take on? A
giant
bunch of semi trucks with.
But a bazooka.
Well, that's a law. That was technically a law.
That you have to have a bazooka in your truck stop.
You should. Okay. Most good truck stops do.
Yeah, by law.
It should be.
Or the law
if I
is
saw this movie,
if you're attacked by a semi-truck, you must have a bazooka within.
If I saw this movie in the 80s, I'd probably go out and buy a bazooka. Like, fuck it, just in case. Because I'm sure in the 80s you could just go buy a bazooka.
Well, we just saw it in the movie.
Everybody had laws back then. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure you could just do it.
Yeah. The law that you must own a bazooka, for instance. I mean,
they're light armored weapons. That's what they're called, is the law.
Suddenly it clicked in. I'm like, all right. Okay. So he's got a bunch of automatic weapons and a bazooka.
Yep.
The bazooka is used a couple of times on the trucks. But what I didn't get, I guess, is that how come Bubba didn't open his warehouse to
and
everybody,
arm
like,
everybody to the
get
teeth
a fucking weapon? Yeah. And get out there and
because Bubba's greedy asshole.
Yeah, there's always that guy.
But
this is a zombie movie
and survive the machine apocalypse.
This is a zombie movie. Like, it's the one guy who's got all the stuff, but he hoards it for himself because he's just looking out for himself. He's like, this is for me. This is for my survival.
And it's classic because the thing that finally motivates him to really get going crazy is they nail his Cadillac. You know,
you sons of bitches, I'm going to get you.
Yeah, and that's when they kill him. So
all right.
There endeth the asshole.
Now, I have a question about the bazooka.
That was an underplayed moment. I was hoping
for
that would be the they fucking killed Bubba moment, but
right, the death's passed kind of
because
just like,
then the waitress with the death wish and the need to tell
Wanda?
The machines that we created you, you can't do this. To
we
us.
Made you. Yeah. And you think that line was put in there just because
AC/DC
did
the
had
song?
Had to be.
Yeah. We got to talk about.
AC/DC, like from start to finish. Top to bottom, this is AC/DC soundtrack.
Their finest work.
They released
Iron
this,
Man.
They released.
Thunderstruck. What was that album? The album that Thunderstruck was on. That was after this, and I want to say they became like a thing again with that. That was like a resurge in popularity.
Well, they have the Who Made Who album.
Yeah, that's
the Who Made Who album.
This.
Is this? They released it as the soundtrack to this movie.
Do you know how AC/DC got to be a part of this movie?
No.
Trivia.
Marvel
Stephen
sold
King,
them with the Green Goblin head.
Stephen King and his wife own a radio station.
That's his favorite band.
It's his favorite band.
Yeah.
Really? So he asked them and they said yes. And of course, he's Stephen King asking. So they said,
yeah.
Because
by then he is Stephen King.
Right. He's like, fuck yeah. We'll even put your band van in the movie.
Yeah. I like the way that at the beginning when it's like music by AC/DC,
right.
They get their logo.
They do.
Yeah.
It's not just like in some fucking words, it's the logo. It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Bravo.
Yeah. And songs, AC/DC songs that we know.
Yeah.
You got Hell's Bells.
Hell's Bells is in it. Who Made Who?
You Shook Me All Night.
That was the endings. That was a credit song.
That wasn't from this album, though, right?
This album. I think they just put that in there as
a
credit song.
Oh, that's from Highway to Hell, isn't it?
All right.
That's from
something. You Shook Me All Night.
And For Those About to Rock was in there as well.
That was in this, right?
Yes. But yeah,
not
yeah, yeah.
From the
not from, not from no, this. Not
the Saint the Tank is from this, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
And I appreciated the fact that like every time there was something on, it's like, you know, I'm a rolling thunder, and you're cutting to like, you know, trucks coming down the highway.
What yeah, was this?
Shake your foundations and the yeah. bulldozers destroying the, you know.
Yep. I mean, sometimes you need AC/DC in every scene to just back up what you're doing.
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to remember because I remember during the movie, but now I can't remember. What was the song that the ice cream truck was playing?
Was it playing an AC/DC song?
No, it wasn't an AC/DC song. Song.
Wasn't it the standard ice cream truck song?
No, it was a song. Damn it. No, I'm not going to remember. I remember it during the movie. It was a song. I can't remember it now. But it wasn't an AC/DC song.
Did they shoot the bazooka? Like, did they actually shoot the bazooka?
I don't know.
It seems in like scenes like that, I'm just like, did they shoot the fucking truck with a bazooka?
Yeah, or
it
was looks that a special like, effects bazooka?
Right, or like they just shoot it, it doesn't explode, but then they explode the truck.
Yeah, because
it looks no, like no, anytime they shot the bazooka, it just yeah, like
because you
it
see
looks
like the they missile shot a bazooka going in there, and then the and thing then it explodes.
Like, did they just shoot a bazooka at this shit?
I only hope that they did.
I hope they did.
Yeah.
I hope they had someone special on set shooting a bazooka at trucks and blowing up.
Should have looked in the credits. Was there a bazooka ring?
Yeah,
yeah,
blowing up Miller trucks and toilet paper.
Well, yeah, and they showers everywhere.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Wonderful. That I was mean, actually pretty good. I like that. The toilet paper, they blew it up, and then there's just streams of it over the fucking smoke. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And yeah, that was good.
Up on the island roof for the yeah. truck or for the fuel island.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
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 Just I mean, that has to be like part of the reason that, you know, as Stephen King, I guess, you know, that you want to do this movie, right? I mean, it does contain a lot of scenes that are just kind of. I mean, they have their own. It's fun to watch.
Yeah.
The drawbridge scene was pretty cool. Like
oh,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because yeah, you're just smashing fucking cars right. together.
I mean, for a good 5 minutes, watermelons.
Bulldozers crushing cars. You've got trucks exploding all over the place. Eventually, right. you get to blow up the Dixie Boy, you know, in a pretty spectacular
explosion. Right, they get to drive trucks into the liquid buildings.
Oxygen truck. You knew that was bad news.
Yeah. But lots of metal slamming into and destroying, you know, metal.
It's got to be part of the appeal. It's like, you need to do all this. I'm like, all right.
Because that's where the budget went. I mean,
sure.
Had
to. Oh, yeah.
Now, do you think he's seen the movie Convoy and kind of got an idea from that? Because they smashed up a lot of stuff with trucks in that movie.
And I have never seen that movie.
Convoy?
Yep.
Oh, you
I used to work in a video store. There was a, to put a delicate point on it, a hillbilly couple who would come in every week and ask, do you have
you guys got Convoy?
Convoy? And I'm like, no, it's not available. But every week they would come in and ask to find out if it was. So I've heard about Convoy with Chris Christopherson and how great it is.
We got a great big Convoy and all
that. Yeah.
Ernest Borgnine's The Crooked Sheriff.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Never seen it.
Oh, yeah.
Borgnine is Crooked Sheriff. All right.
Yeah.
Coming to the Freak Show in the year 2016.
Yeah. Convoy. It's got a following.
Apparently. I think all the semis.
Sean's just making a list.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Shit. Yeah. I'm like running low. It's like, all right. Yeah. Convoy. That sounds interesting. And this is the year of that sounds interesting.
If you have an empty mic that week, invite me for that one because I love that movie.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
It has a lot of love, too. See, that's the other
apparently.
Thing.
Apparently.
Everybody who's seen it looks on it fondly.
Sure.
Convoy. Pay attention, kids. It's probably coming.
Well, and you got the old song, so that kind of coincided with it. And then everybody knew the song, and then the movie came out, and you're like, that's the rubber duck. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, our survivors, you know, finally managed to scoot through drainage tunnels.
They're a bunch of idiots if they didn't figure that out sooner.
Right, this is how we're going to get away.
Well, the 12-year-old kid figured it out. Yeah. You know, he survived on his own. That's what I find amazing about this movie that we haven't touched on. Everybody else is getting murdered left and right, and everybody's huddled into this one place. This kid's riding his bike through town. He sees all these horrors and still makes it out to the truck stop by himself.
Yeah, he goes to the
His town. Dad couldn't make it out of the damn parking lot.
That's because they really are a bunch of idiots. Because every scene is just like, I'm mad, and I'm just going to stand here until this truck hits me.
Right.
And they just stand there and just get hit by trucks. It happens a couple times. Yeah. In this movie.
I know, that's what
they could have jumped out of the way.
Don't forget the convenient key drop right before his half-blind father was run over by the semi.
Sure, course.
These are not the brightest bulbs.
And right, he's blind, but also apparently the diesel affected his hearing because he can't hear a truck bearing down.
Starting up, coming at
him. Well,
these trucks, I mean, come on, give them credit. They are kind of sneaky.
Right,
they can sneak up on you.
Green Goblin snuck up on him at the end of the movie.
Yeah, he got rippy when he was trying to rip that old corpse off.
Yeah.
uh-huh. diamond yeah. ring offer.
All of a sudden, fuck, there's a semi.
There's
like
a huge semi 50 away. Feet away.
Yeah, I couldn't hear it idling.
I'm surprised, and I'm going to get run over. Holy shit. Bunch of smart people. I'm surprised I made it to the boat.
Yeah.
Yeah, the sailboat.
Right. Well, that's a Dawn of the Dead reference. You would think they made it to the boat.
Like I said, it's a zombie movie.
Who wants to go to the island, you know? Until they get there.
I would have taken, like, if they were smart, they would have grabbed another boat. Like, you can't, what the fuck if something happens to that boat? You're fucked.
And I'm
you
sorry, there
two
are
boats.
Still,
you got enough people to grab two boats.
Now, he said there was no motor on that boat whatsoever.
Yeah.
Not even a trolling motor?
I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe they threw it off.
Yeah.
They sure, should have.
Yeah, fuck it.
Yeah, wait a minute.
Yeah. And I love how apparently he knew how to sail. So he is a genius because he knows how to do a lot of things. So, because that's not easy to do. Sailing is a complicated task.
Well, he wasn't steering the fucking ship when he gets the survivors onto it and they're taking off. I noticed he's not the one.
No, the dude with the mustache is like, I'm going to drive this.
Yeah.
Fuck it. The guy I hadn't seen before.
I mean, I suppose it's unique in some way, not unique, but I mean, a rare breed of movie that, like, there's a cluster of people, a gaggle, a group. That survive this film. It doesn't come down to like dude and his girlfriend,
right? Yeah,
it's not the final girl.
Yeah, it's not the last people on Earth. It's not the final girl.
But that's traditionally a Stephen King thing, right? There's usually a group of survivors. Yeah. What is it though? That I mean, if we're talking about a bunch of not entirely sharp folks, mm-hmm. what is it that separates Emilio Estevez's character from the pack? I mean, aside from
the pack that he's with.
What?
The pack that he's with?
Yes. I mean, aside from the fact that she's saying he's a genius.
He's a genius.
Yeah, but only because she says so. What is it that he's got that allows him to
maybe it's not what he's got, but it's what everybody else doesn't have. Like, I think if you go through the group, you can just eliminate him. Like, the truck drivers don't care.
No.
Right.
They
ain't putting their butt
Hendershot's only out for himself.
Yeah. Right.
The couple is she's hysterical for the entire movie. That's
Kurt
all.
Is,
but he's
brave.
He's the brave guy, but brave doesn't obviously equal smart. But he'll help his man, but he can't. Like, well, I don't know how to. He doesn't know how to get out of the situation.
Right.
I think it's Emilio Estevez's territory. Like he knows it a bit more than anybody else who's in there. The waitress is obviously also out of her mind.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And that doesn't leave very much. I mean, the kid is also smart, but he's down and out because his dad. Nobody's going to listen to him, and his dad's dead. So he's kind of out of commission.
Well, and I think Emilio Estevez has that part where he's that character that has the problem with authority, but has great leadership skills, to a degree.
Sure.
I'm curious, like what, I guess that's what I know he leads the group because the movie says that he has to, but what is it that gives him the leadership quality? I think, as you're laying it out, Sean or Bubba, that I'm kind of getting the idea that it's
Bubba
like,
Jr.
Well,
thank you.
There's no one else to take up the mantle.
Right.
So he's the youngest,
he's a
reluctant the fittest.
Leader.
Right.
So he can run and crawl under shit and do all that other stuff.
And everything is kind of broken down. Like everything that was holding him back at this point has just broken down. Like Hendershot's kind of holding him back at this point. He's got to do what Hendershot says. Otherwise, he's going back to jail.
Yeah.
But because this event is happening, it all kind of breaks down. I'm adding a lot more to Maximum Overdrive than I think the filmmakers thought of this.
But he's also encouraged by the girl.
He's got the woman there who's encouraging him.
So he's got to save her life. She never really becomes the damsel in distress
at all.
No.
Which is also like, what? So, it's like usually the function of the girl in these type of movies is to be rescued or to... I guess what she does in this movie, she just basically encourages the heroism because she's like always just reaffirming that you're a hero. Mm-hmm. You make love like a hero. You're a genius.
And he's never had that in his life, Colin.
But that brings me to a point. She also lost that virginal quality when they had sex in the movie. So she can't be the final girl anyway, according to the old way they did things in the movies. So
but you get the idea. She's an experienced girl when you meet her,
Yeah.
Don't you?
It's not her first rodeo.
You can say ho. That's okay.
I didn't say
ho. I don't think so.
She's in charge of her own.
Right. She makes the decisions.
Girls just want to have fun.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what the outfit says.
Madonna brought them to that.
See, exactly. Yeah. 80s empowerment.
Well, and the thing is,
of course, we're talking about her in a movie where she serves basically to function as the hero's motivation.
Well, she's almost wearing the Desperately Seeking Susan wardrobe.
That's what I'm saying. I say it's Madonna or something. Yeah. Maybe that was it. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. That makes more sense.
Yeah, that was a good
one. There you go. Good Paul.
Yeah.
Well, we were discussing before we started the show, breaking down what is the favorite Stephen King movie for, I mean, just around the table, what's yours?
Colin. Jesus.
Oh, Jesus, I didn't see
favorite
that one.
Stephen King movie.
Now we're just encompassing everything, whether it's directed, written, produced, whatever.
Yes, just
yeah. That's what
based on a Stephen King
movie. Okay. So not, you know, because The Stand, the book, is like one of the greatest things I ever read.
Right. We'll do both. We'll do book and movie.
I am a big fan of Pet Sematary, the movie, even though I think you would do it different if you were to do it today. Yes. I mean, there's a lot of problems with it, but it's just eerie.
That's the one I grew up with that scared the shit out of me.
Yeah, it just deals with like a taboo subject.
Yeah, killing kids and coming back from the dead and everything. Yeah. And that whole thing where he gets hit by the semi is like, oh,
yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah.
And that shoe just tumbles across the street. I saw that as a young kid. Sure. Yeah. Definitely. And at the end, spoiler alert to everybody who hasn't seen Pet Sematary. I mean, come on. At the end, where just like his wife comes back and just like cuts to black and it's him screaming and everything. It's just, ooh.
Oh, yeah.
That is it. And the old lady, her mom was
Zelda.
Zelda in it. And what, Fred Gwynn's
Never
in this
get
movie?
Out of
yes.
Yeah.
Fred Gwynn's in this
Never
movie gets his
get
fucking.
Oh, yeah.
So the visuals are. Yeah, it does. It really
Maybe
does.
Maybe that is my favorite. I don't know. I own that one and I have The Shawshank Redemption, which I think is one of the, like, you know, because that
forgotten
was,
ones.
Well, that was a
forgotten
season.
I mean, but it's different.
Stand By Me was 86, too, the movie, based on the body.
They're all coming back, man. They're
everywhere.
All coming back.
Has to be the most.
Graveyard Shift.
Yeah.
You say that one already? All right. So maybe. I'll go with, for lack of anything else, Pet Sematary.
Book.
The Stand. Or The Shining. Shining was really good, too.
Okay. For me, movie.
Cujo. Or The Dark Half. Cujo. So you say The Dark
Cujo
Half?
Cujo is my favorite. And that brings me to a point I'm going to talk about in just a second. But Cujo is my favorite movie. It's just that desperation being locked in and that animal's out there. And it's not because he's vicious or hateful. He's sick. He really can't control himself.
Yeah.
You know?
Rabid, right?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite movies.
Read the book of that? Because Cujo, you get inside his head, he talks. And, you know,
yeah.
You're inside the head of the dog.
That's where I'd go movie over book with me. And as far as my favorite book is Nightmares and Dreamscapes. I love the short stories.
What's your favorite short story in Nightmares and Dreamscapes?
Gramsci. Where the kid gets
abducted. Popsy.
Popsy. Where he gets abducted from the mall and he keeps telling him, my Popsy's coming. And the guy's like, yeah, shut up, kid. And then the van, the hood of the, or the roof of the van gets ripped off and his grandfather's a vampire. Is Chattering Teeth in there? I think that's
Chattering Teeth.
That's in Nightmares and Dreamscapes.
It might be. I remember, what was it, Crouch End or whatever, the H.P. Lovecraft thing.
Well, here's one that bothers me. Now, you mentioned The Dark Half, which we hadn't mentioned up until this point that you brought it up. When King wrote his Richard Bachman, okay, they went through this whole thing. I read The Regulators, okay, and it talks about how this story was found after Richard Bachman died of cancer in 1985. And as I'm reading the book, there's a kid riding down the street wearing a Shaquille O'Neal jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, Shaquille O'Neal didn't even play basketball. Yeah,
maybe Stephen King doctored it up.
Maybe. But it was one of those things that it's, you know, like nitpicking, but it's one of those things you find. But it's like you're looking at The Dark Half. Because the Bachman books, that's a great read.
Can you even get Rage anymore? The one where the kid goes in and shoots up his school class?
Probably not.
There's that Running Man. Road Work and
Road Work and The Long Walk. Long Walk is one of my favorites. That's another blister one. Both those are in the Bachman.
Don't worry, we're getting to your favorite Stephen King movie. But Richard Bachman, you know why that came about?
Because they didn't want him to flood the market.
He said it was, I want to say he said at some point that it was because like he would write stuff and everybody was just like, oh, Stephen King, you know, and it was because he took off so hot. He wanted to find out if people actually like, you know, thought he was a good writer or whatever. So he'd write under a pseudonym to see if like anybody pays attention to Richard Bachman. And then some fucking, I think it was a literary agent or something. It was like, this reads like Stephen King, and tracked down some copyright checks or whatever. And that's what inspired the Dark Half.
Oh, okay.
And it's like, okay, now I'm going to kill off my alter ego because he's been exposed, you know. Well,
and this isn't a King, but In the Mouth of Madness. I always thought King kind of inspired that a little bit.
Oh, to be sure, yeah. It was like a cross between Stephen King, Koontz, and H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah, Lovecraft, too.
The poor man's Stephen King.
Right. Yeah.
He's actually extremely prolific.
He's got some good
books. He is as well. Too. Like, I've read more Koontz books than King books, to tell you the truth. He's always been my author Mr. as far Murder. As that goes. Yeah. But.
What was your favorite Stephen King movie?
I think it gets the edge over Pet Sematary, but it's almost a tie between those two because I grew up on Pet Sematary and it. Those are the first two. Because it scared the shit out of me. First of all, it's a clown. Mm. Just in the fact that, like, there's something living in the sewers and all that shit. And it's just down like, here we all float.
Yeah,
come
I got
Georgie.
There.
I'm just like,
I go down there all the time. Yeah.
No and, that's a great story to have that group of kids have this, like, horrific event happen to them and then to have, like, that evil lay dormant in the sewers, and then years later, like, it all starts coming back, and the stories start coming back, and they all have to go back to the town. Like, I love that story.
You mean, so like, sometimes they come back?
Isn't that like Dreamcatcher?
I like that movie, too.
Dreamcatcher? There's another
Dreamcatcher. Yeah, that was another one. That was fucking – was that King or Koontz?
That was King.
That was King.
Dreamcatcher was King.
Because that was the other one that kind of runs that line, too. They were all as kids and the special powers.
The alien gets in through your butt and you fart a lot.
Yes. Jason Lee, like, a shit weasel. They call it a shit weasel.
Yeah. You know you're possessed by an alien if you
did you read the book, though?
Mm.
Book's really good.
Favorite book?
I haven't read a lot of King. I think I'm going to start going back through them, like It and Salem's Lot and shit like that. But I think... probably a recent one, 11/22/63. It's a really good book. Because I've read that, Cell, and a couple other ones, but 11/22/63, I think.
So we're saying Stephen King still is a mainstay of, like, you still read, people still read Stephen King.
Yes.
Yeah. He's the go-to guy for horror.
Go-to?
I mean, it's a lot.
Other
it's
writers
really
that have come along.
It's a really fragmented at this point. I think you have because again, it's almost like with movies. Anybody can almost anybody can like publish a book at this point or get it out there at some point. Maybe not as wide as obviously as Stephen King can because you know he makes a book and it goes everywhere, good or not at this point. Right. And I mean, I don't know how many of his books that he's because he's still releasing a lot. Mm-hmm. How many are hitting on the levels that some of his older works have? But
I know there's Dr. Sleep was like a big deal when it came out.
Right,
a sequel to The Shining.
Yeah,
well, yeah, and that's the whole thing is there's still books. What's that?
Bag of Bones and
what's that one? From a Buick.
Yeah, from a Buick.
From Buick 68.
From a Buick 8.
From Buick 8.
Yeah.
Let's see.
It was like a car that like pooped out like alien shit or something like that. I can't write. Gerald's Game is good. Dolores Claiborne's a good movie. Good guy. The list just keeps going.
Oh, jeez.
Well, now he's got a bunch of them too that are going on like on Netflix. Like that, the one about the truck driver with Maria Bello in it.
The
Good Driver or something.
Good Marriage.
There's another one, The Dark Driver.
Full Dark, No Stars or something. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's a King one too.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Like The Good Marriage comes out, and it wasn't like a big deal. Like I remember
was that based on Gerald's Game.
It's a short story in one of the collections. I think it's Full Dark, No Stars. But I'm not sure, but. You know, it's like, I guess that's what's kind of disappointing. And that's why I was thinking, like, you know, is his star fading as far as, you know, there's the hunger for putting out every single thing that he writes and turning it into a movie. In the 80s, it was like you went to see every single fucking thing that, you know, that came out that was bore the name Stephen
King. Had his name attached to
it. But how many of us have seen Hearts in Atlantis? I mean, come on.
No.
That's what I thought.
No.
Anthony Hopkins. Nicole Kidman.
Yeah.
Hearts in Atlantis.
I know it. Well, I have not seen it because that did not look like a movie I would want to see.
Right, yeah.
Woo, no. But the success of this movie. That was the other thing. Like, this was I don't think this did very well when it came out.
I don't think so.
As I can remember. No. And as if you didn't know, Stephen King admits himself he was coked out of his mind while making this movie, which might explain, although it is, like, I look at it, it's a competently made movie. Some shots look a little like handheld, amateurish when he's like in front of the trucks, you know, just.
Yeah, but a lot of the credit to the cinematographer.
Sure, which he may
Armando Nazzaruti, or I don't know what
Nannuzzi
I just butchered
or
that.
Yeah, something like that. He may have co-directed this movie, if you know what I mean, since Stephen King was just.
So do you think Stephen just sat in the chair and goes, yeah, it looks good. We'll go with that. Yeah.
Oh, looks really good. Oh,
somebody hold my mirror. I got to check the shot.
Well, he's always had like these very like frank, I think forthright and frank passages like in his books where he talks directly to constant reader.
Yeah. Well, see, they talk about that in a documentary called American Scary, and they're talking about how, you know, in movies, they'll step outside the movie and they say, you know, the good authors like Stephen King, they'll do that. You know, they'll step outside and go, hey, kids, you know, that wasn't a good idea.
So, I don't know who else like the devil really did that. I mean, not the way that, I mean, because he was so proficient and all of his books pretty much had that, you know, prologue or whatever preface where he would talk to you about like how the movie or how the story came about or like what was going on in his life at the time. You know, it like really gave me an insight into how writers work, or at least him a little bit, you know.
But the like thing his that writing I, was a little therapeutic almost.
Well, he says, yeah, I mean, he says that he, you know, would explain, I guess he wrote books, you know, Danse Macabre and On Writing, about writing it, you know, the process of writing itself. But the thing that, you know, that I thought was interesting was that, I mean, having read a lot of that early stuff and during this period, he was very forthright about his alcoholism, right? He suffered in the 70s, it sounded like, and then kind of – it sounded like he conquered that demon and he quit smoking. You know, he used to be a smoker. But what he doesn't talk about is the massive cocaine and drug usage. But this newer interview says that – like, he doesn't even remember writing Cujo.
If you really? Can
believe that. He's like, all those – he's like, I can't even remember writing those books. Those are some of those early books. And I want to say he's, you know, he gives descriptions of like, you know, writing over a typewriter with Kleenexes shoved up his nose to stop the blood from pouring out onto the paper. That, and he was afraid that once he stopped doing drugs and getting drunk, that he would be unable to write.
Right, he would just lose it.
And so I guess there was a period of time where his wife and kids basically said, like, look, this is it. Either you fucking clean your shit up, or, you know, they poured all his shit out in front of him. And it was like, this is it. You're losing us, or you're doing this. And so he quit. And I guess he said that the worst thing that could possibly happen did happen. He couldn't write after, you know, while he was sober. And he said it was just, it was like learning to write again or something. He said he had to do it, you know, one word at a time. And I think they said the first novel that he did sober was Needful Things. So if you can figure out
Needful Things, Needful Things. There's another one. I was gonna. So that was shit. That was what I was trying to think of.
That fucking story is Salem's Lot. I mean, he has the same reoccurring, you know, themes. You've got the town under siege from the thing that moves in and corrupts an entire American town because of their
it's the devil.
Because of their, you know, who human nature is. He takes advantage of it, and they all, you know, kill each other. I think that happens in The Mist and, you know, a number of, you know.
Absolutely.
Not so much in this, right? I mean, in this I was like, has he ever had a religious character, like, who represents religion that he doesn't mock in some way? Like, spiritual characters like, who's the old black lady in The Stand? Grandma someone or mama someone.
Mother something.
Mother Abigail?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, spiritual characters.
Yeah, but she's not over the top. The girl in The Mist.
But if you
over
represent like some kind of like, you know, because he's always going after Baptists and Pentecostals or Lutherans, you know.
Like the zombie goes after hillbillies.
Well, you think in Silver Bullet, like the priest is the bad, or the reverend. Or sorry, he's not a priest. He's the bad guy, you know, the werewolf. Spoiler, sorry, you know, just ruined that one. But there's like these things that keep popping up in his movies. This is turning into my wrap up, and we haven't done Igor's mailbag yet.
Oh shit, Igor!
Masters, the mail. I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
Well, thank you, Igor. We do have some messages, at least a message from Facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show. Again, if you want to reach out and talk to us about this episode or anything else that we've done, and we appreciate you new listeners who are liking our pages and Twitter.
And comment if Twitter. You actually type in Facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show instead of just going to Facebook and searching for
us. Yeah, I want to know if you do. And that. They click like. Yeah. We like that you do that, but you know, you can talk to us too. Susan Darko says, I just watched this last week and it's a classic talking about Maximum Overdrive. And we got a message from Travis.
What?
Yeah, that's right. Freak Show Travis. Okay, so who remembers the short-lived Fox TV show? Was it ABC with John Lovitz? It was a cartoon. It was called The Critic.
The Critic, yeah.
You do a pretty good John Lovitz?
No.
You remember what
I barely do a good me at this time of night.
You remember what his tagline was in that, if he didn't like a movie?
It stinks.
Yeah. There you go. That's Travis for you.
Oh, boy. The comedy of John Lovitz.
He's summoning John Lovitz to give us a... So he didn't like Maximum Overdrive. So if Travis was here...
He would have been a no vote.
Yeah. He would have hated Maximum Overdrive.
Well, right. And it's like anything else. I think it's if you grew up in that era, it's the things you cling to and that you care, that you love. Because, yep. I mean, we went from that to your, 1408. So, I mean, it's a balance.
1408. That's another one you didn't mention. Jesus.
Working another one. Okay. So, wrap ups. I'm going to start. I want to say it's my third go around with this movie, having seen it not in the theaters, but somewhere around its original release back then. I remember not being a fan of it because I remember thinking more so I had this feeling now, I guess, than then. Then I was just disappointed it wasn't a horror movie. This time around, you're sitting there going this is a writer. Now we have writers making movies, writers going and becoming directors. We're talking about Bone Tomahawk. That's a guy who is a novelist who wrote his first movie. And it's all about the characters and the dialogue. And you're like, this guy's a fucking genius because, you can feel that kind of – he's making a novel on the screen. You got Quentin Tarantino, who's a writer who's come over and, directs his own – well, I guess he wasn't a novelist, but, the idea that
– Right, but he was a writer,
If he wasn't working in movies, that guy would be writing novels all the time. Clive Barker was, I guess, in some ways a similar figure to King, only because he was a horror novelist who made the jump to directing his own features because the stuff that was based on his – fiction was so poorly done. Rawhead Rex and what was the other one? Transmutations or something like that. It was something terrible that, he was given a chance to direct and made three films, good or bad, varying quality, but at least, they were more, he was, I think more personally in the end product than this Stephen King movie. King has called this a moron movie, right? I remember an interview around the time he's like, he was basically trying to say it's not pretentious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like I love moron movies. I love Return of the Living Dead when the paramedics are like, the zombies attack the paramedics and then like send more paramedics. He's like, that's a great moment, and it's not, you don't have to be, half awake even to follow these movies. Sure. They're just supposed to be fun. So it's like, okay, if you throttle back and you're like, the movie starts off with a machine calling a guy an asshole. It's like, all right, so this is setting the tone. We know it's not going to be scary. And I think, the younger me was disappointed that that wasn't the fact. This time around, I'm like, you've got – it's one of those like it's a bad movie. Mm. Is it good enough to say like you got to see it? Because, the acting, for the most part, it's either poor or the characterizations are so broad that, the characterizations are poor.
It's a killer truck movie, damn it.
But it is a killer truck movie. Oh, we didn't even say that, at the end, a fucking text crawl says basically the end title card of a UFO.
Which was doing the broom.
Right. That's what I was going to connect back.
So Emilio is a genius. Billy is a genius.
A genius.
You're right, Bubba. You're right.
We end the movie with confirmation that Emilio Estevez is in fact a genius in this movie. Because in the last title card it says, a UFO, like some days later, a UFO was discovered and shot down by a Russian, like it describes as a Russian weather balloon that happened to have a laser cannon and nuclear warheads on it from Russia. Yeah.
So this is a comedy. I mean, like, it's totally,
it is.
It is the work of someone who's coked out of their mind.
It really is.
Don't worry, they're going to go see it because it's got your name on it, Steve.
Yeah, yeah. You're safe. Yeah,
yeah. But I mean, I think of your legacy, right? Huh? You know, it's like there's so many other and better things that it seems like. I don't know. He always the thing that about Stephen King novels that never gets transmitted to the screen. Mm. Because he really does capture like the inner process of these people. Like you believe them when he sets them up.
Right.
He creates realistic, ordinary people in situations that could be like this novel would function as a drama. And then the supernatural shows up.
Yeah.
Sometimes spooky, sometimes just silly as all fucking hell. And you're like, what? There's a giant finger growing out of this guy's drain. You've seen that one? I can't remember what it was called, but a giant finger grows out of a drip. Yeah. There's a haunted men's room sneaker. Okay. But he sometimes comes up with these just ridiculous fucking concepts that either sometimes kill it or, you know, the creepy ones, I think actually nails it and it becomes like a, you know, thing. So, but that's hard to translate what's going, you know, to make these realistic characters present in, his movies. I was thinking Riding the Bullet, maybe, is one of the better ones that capture what it's actually like to read a Stephen King story because it uses narration. And it jumps around in time, and it feels more like you're reading a novel. But
Green Mile.
Does that have – are you just throwing out names?
I'm just throwing out that.
We got to get them all in there.
We haven't mentioned it, so I'm throwing it out there.
So, yeah, would I recommend this? I don't know. I was entertained by the amount of twisted metal. Nobody. Okay.
It's a video game. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I didn't have any connection to
Sweet Tooth. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's a great game.
All right. So that was kind of fun to watch, but it does get kind of boring watching these humans run around doing nothing. So whenever the trucks are killing people or smashing shit or blowing up, you know, it's like, meh, it's a passable Saturday night kind of movie. Saturday bad movie night movie. Gary.
Okay, I agree with you. A lot of King's writing to me, his descriptiveness and the way he brings the characters to life, you feel involved and the crossover and the different stories. And this story just doesn't seem to have any of that. I catch it with a lot of the other things. Like I said, the Blue Ribbon Laundry and Mangler, different things. I remember the connections and feel that. This movie, like, I don't know. He has so many great things out there. And then you look at this and opposed. He has some bad ones too, though. Like I said, 1408, I am not a fan. I like the story. In fact, I listen to it when I'm driving. I'll listen to the book on tape or whatever, audio. Book on tape, good God.
I'm old, okay? It's still, I mean, anyway. I know it's you can call it whatever you want. It's still a book on tape. Yeah. It really is.
But anyway, so then you look at this and it's a fun movie as far as, like you said, smashing up vehicles and just cool stunts, things like that. Great acting? Not really. A lot of bit actors thrown together. They do their part, their little parts here and there. Emilio Estevez, though, this is where he's all over the map. He goes from his dad to Brando to Dean back to him. And it just feels a little forced at times with him, I guess.
But is it the writing?
But it's
some of the. I don't think it's the writing. I think that's Emilio.
There was nobody there to direct him. Yeah. Like, don't do Brando right
it's
now.
Like, it's like he looks up from her line. It's like, Steve, what should I do? Yeah, whatever you want, man.
You want a line? Will a line help you get to the scene?
I don't even remember writing this.
Yeah. Do a line. That'll help you. Who wants lines?
Yeah, lines. Oh, no, not those, Steve. No.
But I need my line. Lines?
I mean, I do like the movie. I do have fun with it. That image of the truck with the Green Goblin, that's always been, you know, you remember that from childhood.
Yeah.
I guess I'd have to almost go with your recommendation that if you want to have a fun time, get a bunch of people together like we do, you know, get together, watch it together, drink while you're watching it, and have fun with it. You know, nitpick a little bit. My biggest thing, like I said, some of the vehicles, questionable, you know. but I don't know, the girl and him, that just seemed way too convenient, happened way too fast. You know, even for the 80s, that was pretty quick. But yeah, I'm looking at there's so many movies I love more than this, you know. If you look at even the Stand By Me's, things like that, that aren't necessarily horror, you know, the characters are more, you get more involved. I didn't feel involved with any of the characters, really. Billy a little bit, I guess, but not, I didn't have, if they'd have whacked Billy 10 minutes into it, I'd have been okay with it, you know.
We've got that good, you know, Rebel Without a Cause.
Just yeah. That look away. But you captured it, though. That look away, like, no, I'm dirty. No. Don't look at me.
Don't do it. I'm tainted.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to recommend it just because if you're a Stephen King completist and you want to see all of his works, you have to see this movie. Again, if you are a completist, you have to see this movie.
That's like a project right there. Now that we're naming all these things.
Yeah, after all that.
Really, sit down and watch that. That's a good month worth of watching things.
So where in the list of like 30 to 50 odd Stephen King adaptations? 49. Ooh, that's not a recommendation. Let's see it eventually.
Well, but it's still above 1408. 1408 is 50, so this is still above that.
I like that movie.
I don't know.
It was much better than
Maximum. I like Cusack, but I don't like that movie. I like the story better. You know, he's got some really weird ones out there, I guess, that don't really translate for me. I'm trying to think of the bad ones.
Bag of Bones was good for half of it, then it went to shit in the second half.
Yeah.
The bad ones are like Rose Red, and I thought Storm of the Century was bad. And
Storm of the Century
is bad. The remake of The Shining was bad.
Okay, while we're on remakes, and I wanted to mention this during, and I almost forgot, but I want to bring it up in my wrap-up.
They remade Sam.
Happiest remake that got that was canceled bad. Was the remake of It, where they were using the kid from
Meet the Millers. We Are the Millers. Kerry Fukunaga was going to direct it, but the True fucking Detective, True Detective, but the studio wanted something, it sounded like, inoffensive as far as making this movie.
That's another problem. Let's face it. With horror, that's the biggest problem we have nowadays is we try and make everything PG-13 so we can get a bigger audience. And we lose a lot of the good horror movies, you know?
Yeah, that would have been maybe it would have been shit, but I think it would have been a good movie. Kerry Fukunaga doing It? Oh, I was in.
On the plus side, they are still talking about The Dark Tower.
Yeah, they've been talking about The Dark Tower for fucking years.
And The Stand, I think.
I haven't read a book. I've read half of the first book. I will be able to finish that series before they make that movie or miniseries or whatever it's going to end up being.
Well,
they're going to talk about that forever.
So my official vote is I would recommend the movie if you're a Stephen King fan. If you're not, don't waste your hour and whatever.
I think the consensus is that Maximum Overdrive is a Saturday night movie. It is that movie you get together with your friends, you drink, and you watch, and you can ridicule it, you can enjoy some parts of it, but, you know, I think you can enjoy it. Obviously, you can't take it seriously. Like, it's not a movie that allows you to do that in any way, shape, or form. It does lull. There was a point in like maybe 45 minutes in where you're just like, all right, we could snap it up a little bit, folks. This movie was an hour and 10 minutes. It probably would have been fantastic. But I think it is. Get together with friends, drink, watch this movie. I think that's the best way to enjoy it. And I think you should do that. Get your friends together, drink, and watch Maximum Overdrive.
And put in your own dialogue.
Definitely. Sit there, talk about it. I think you can enjoy this movie, and I recommend it.
Were you having the best day of your life until every goddamn machine on the planet went into Maximum Overdrive?
I was. I really fucking was. And then, goddamn it. Oh.
All right. Well, that's Maximum Overdrive on this week's Saturday Night Freak Show. Next week, Brent will be back, and he is picking The Beach. I'm assuming this is the Leonardo DiCaprio
Beach.
So is there a theme here? It's two Leonardo DiCaprio movies. He's really itching for Leo to get the Oscar.
I think so. I think it's just like I'm threatening to show Leo movies until he gets an Oscar.
Or it's the year of Leonardo DiCaprio.
We have enough movies to make that stretch. That's all right.
I'm sure.
Yeah,
right?
He's got plenty. Sure. Like he's got enough Scorsese movies to make it to the end of the year.
Yeah. Okay, so that's next week on the Saturday Night Freak Show. And until then, the basement is going dark.